Blog Talk Welcome Radio.
Welcome to Sankofa Radio, where we travel through the past before stopping here at the present on our journey into the future. I'm your host, Sundiata Ray Vaughn, with my co-host, Oscar Donso. Today's show, we will discuss pathogenic prison, the psychological effects that prison can cause. Brother Scar, are you with me?
I'm with you, my man. I'm with you. I'm sorry I was late, man. Peace.
Hey, how you be?
Doing all right, Black.
Yes,
man.
Sir.
So, I think I'm going to kick it off with a dedication today to Thurgood Marshall, man, in light of what's going on with the Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, one of our heroes in the judicial movement. Thurgood Marshall, who was instrumental in Brown versus Board of Education and a whole host of, litigation down in the South from 1930s all the way up to the 1960s, and then on the bench in the Supreme Court, making a lot of decisions, man, that impacted the quality of life of Black people in the country, prisoners' rights, women's rights. So shout out to Thurgood Marshall. It's unfortunate that he was replaced by one of the most conservative judges. Uncle Tom, Clarence Thomas. But so, yo, what was you saying, bro? I want to cut your wisdom. What was you saying before I called in, man?
Yes, sir. I was talking about today's show, part two to pathogenic prison and the psychological effects prison can have, on those who are incarcerated, the impact of long-term segregation, or just being incarcerated and what you see and witness, or the treatment you receive from correctional officers who may tend to have some type of inferiority or superiority complex due to your prison garb or position, and how that can affect the individual. Is it for the good or for the worse? And does prison really rehabilitate, or does it actually develop or retard the development of an individual?
I added on about that last week, and I would say, for me, the greatest impediment that comes out of incarceration is exactly how it impacts your ability to be an effective citizen, man. And I say that because, I think that prisons being pathogenic and what I would say criminogenic, being basically meaning producing criminal mentality, I think that they are actually counterproductive to citizenship. And what I mean is this. So when you're in prison, you get penalized, man, for trying to exercise your democratic rights, things like freedom of association. So, I know, dog, when we try to get together and get on the yard and discuss how it is we can challenge, even in a nonviolent, pro-social way, how we can challenge the institution for some policies that we might feel are unconstitutional. I know we could face retribution for that. We could mess around and be in a hole, get transferred. You know what I'm saying? So brothers don't really understand government, how policy works, how government works, who government officials are. And when you're a citizen of the United States, man, you have a responsibility, to be informed. You know what I'm saying? So for me, that's probably the biggest hurdle. I always wonder, on the flip side of that, now that you've been able to be released, how has your experience in here, how did it impact you, as far as adjustment and being able to, adapt, becoming socialized out there?
Yeah, well, I can honestly definitely say that prison has affected me. I think in a positive way, it was my own positive reinforcement, and the brothers who I chose to surround myself with, it made me override, some of the adverse effects of being incarcerated. But definitely that residual effect is still there. Like I was speaking with you, dealing with, I still have feelings of bitterness, of resentment. I still have anger, when it comes to any type of authority or any type of board or panel of legislatures or people who choose to govern or dictate policies, I have a sort of disdain against, because of my duration of being around or oppressed or suppressed by people who control and manipulated or dictated how I moved or what I could and couldn't do. and being, just like you say, utilizing the grievance procedure or complaint procedure, seeing how they would all stick together, you know, they would come in, destroy your paperwork, you know, shake down. They would even intimidate you through physical or corporal punishment, you know, lie, give you fake charges, economically extort you by giving you these charges and taking money off your book. And, you know, when you and writing to these particular boards for help and support, you know, just being shot down, you know, being denied that justice, you know, it just created in me a anger, a resentment, and sort of a pessimist, you know, that I think cannot really ever be healed or remedied until it's like a complete removal, you know what I'm saying? So it really made my mind a bit more radical, you know what I'm saying, for better words. And, yeah, so in those ways, and then on an emotional level, like I say, being confined to solitary confinement, and I know psychologists, the psychiatrists have came with their deducements about the cruel and unusual punishment of being in solitary confinement, not having environmental stimulation, being subjected to like horse pens and horse stalls where you have, you know, a little bit of room to move around, all these things having a psychological effect. And sometimes out here in society, you know, I find myself still wanting to just withdraw, you know what I'm saying, to seclude myself and just, you know, just be alone sometimes, you know what I'm saying. I think, you know, that come from being in solitary confinement for over 2 years in segregation, what they call administrative segregation, where you only get, 23 hours in the cell, 1 hour out, you know, either for shower or rec, you know what I'm saying. And so being in confinement for that long, I think, you know, by habitual nature of human beings, we tend to like become our own soothers, our own healers, you know what I'm saying? And so out here when things get kind of rough and rugged, rocky, you know, I just shoot everybody away and just want to be by myself. And I think that came from being in that long-term solitary confinement like that, you know what I'm saying? And of course, being, you know, one thing about the system, you know, the way they set up these security levels, you know, the most high security levels are ostracized in these rural areas, in these mountain areas away from our families. So you don't receive your family support that you really need. And so by not having nobody there to help you during these issues that you have with administration or just, you know, having that communication and bond, it creates that solitary mind frame where you feel like, man, I don't need nobody. You know, I can do this myself. I don't have no choice but to do it myself. You feel me? And that activates sometime out here. That experience, you know, still comes to the forefront out here, you know, during time. And, you know, I think it also can lead guys out here, if they're not careful, to alcoholism, drug abuse, just like being in the war, coming home from war. You know, they say that the drug abuse, the alcohol abuse increases, you know, from what these guys experienced while they was in the war, you know, veterans. And I think it's the same thing. A lot of guys can resort to, you know, drug abuse or alcohol abuse to just, you know, to numb themselves, I guess, or to just self-medicate and just try to forget about it, you know what I'm saying, or just stimulate their mind to create some type of feeling of euphoria, you know what I'm saying? So it definitely has some adverse effects, you know what I'm saying? And for a prison to promote or to try to propagate that they are all about rehabilitation, you know, it flies in the face of those who are doing long-term prison sentences, you know what I'm saying? The things they witness, like a lot of things that goes on in prison, these lawmakers don't know about, you know, like the everyday, what I used to call the petty torture of asking a correctional officer for request forms so you can get a larger T-shirt or to get some new laundry because your laundry was lost, and you being you having to wait on him. He may have an attitude problem, or he may feel he gonna make you wait. You see what I'm saying? These petty tortures. Now you got to walk around with no T-shirt. It might be cold outside. So You waiting on this guy to bring you some new laundry. You know what I'm saying? All these things create this anger. And if you snap out in prison, what happens is you might get a charge. You might go to the hole. They might take your commissary. So there's a consequence. So you got to hold it in. And I think this creates a real volatile situation when a person is back in the street. And he can even start to look at law enforcement, people who are in these legislative positions as enemies. You know what I'm saying? And also as prey. And he may also even start to look at other citizens as prey too, because they have an experience where he's experienced. And he's sort of like an outsider. And a lot of times I catch myself in that mind frame as well, you know, where I can feel like, you know, adapt a predatory mind state where I want to exercise some type of aggression on people. You know what I'm saying? Some violent aggression. And, because I was in an aggressive environment.
You think you got that from the prison?
Yes, sir. I know I got that from the prison. You know, well, I think it was already there because my neighborhood I grew up in was pretty violent. But I think in prison, you have all the, everything is concentrated. You see, so when you have all these different elements, you have violent people there, you have, you know, con, you got a lot of different elements there. And it's right before you can't escape it. You can't escape seeing somebody getting hit upside the head, you know, where talking a problem out is really not the first priority. You know, it's a survival thing. And so most people, you know, solve problems with aggression. And so if you witness that every single day, it's planted in your subconscious, whether you like it or not. You know what I'm saying? And so that's what happens. And even this aggression is brought on by the officers too. You know, because they not following protocol or what the proper way of doing things. You know, they responded with aggression as well, especially in these higher level facilities. You know. And
yeah,
so,
I recently watched the warden tell a guy that Jesus fucking Christ himself couldn't tell him not to do something if he wanted to do it. You know what I'm saying? And that kind of speaks to the aggressive mindset of the administration, not just here, but, you know, most administrators in most prisons throughout Virginia, I can speak particularly to, because I've been on a prison tour now for almost 18 years. But I think I can relate, man, because when I was in Red Onion, you know, I did almost 2 years in the hole myself in solitary confinement, and I was in the hole for something I ain't do. You know what I'm saying? They wanted to give me a full body cavity search. I refused because it was illegal and it was dehumanizing, so I won't do it even if it was legal. But it was illegal because they didn't have the right to do it because I was going to work. And because I refused, man, I ended up in the hole. And then when I ended up in the hole, you know what I'm saying, they wrote false charges, said that I threatened to kill them, and withdrew all my rights.
That's
I didn't even have a hearing, man. You know what I'm saying? So I spent almost 2 years in the hole. And this definitely created me a certain hostility and resentment towards the state, you know what I'm saying, and towards the system, because it makes me begin to look at the state as an enemy, as you say, you know what I'm saying, and as an adversary, somebody that I'm against, rather than trying to work with and become more pro-social towards. They actually create resentment, like you say, man, and bitterness. I think that's crazy. I want to ask you, man, being that you out there, how many people around you, and my man Billy's supposed to be calling in to add on to this conversation, going to give some good perspective too here soon. But people would you say that you know, man, are disenfranchised, you know, ain't able to vote? Have you seen the impact of that? And what do you know? What do you think about that, being that you done lost your voting rights?
Actually,
what you doing, man? You trying to get your voting rights back?
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. I'm in the process of doing that now. And as a matter of fact, my cousin, man, he had some violent charge, well, a firearm charge, but in the commission of a felony, distribution of heroin, but he's got his rights to vote back. And he's very proud about that. He posted it on Facebook. And I, from seeing him, you know, take an interest in wanting to vote and to participate in the whole election is a great thing. So seeing what Terry McAuliffe is doing, trying to push that, that's a great thing. You know, as far as people being disenfranchised, is a 50-50 thing. Like, you got a lot of people who just don't care, not concerned about it. and that's just because of the political consciousness or awareness as into the importance of voting, of having the proper representation. It's really not driven into, you know, their minds. And but for those who, for brothers, and then on the other hand, you know, brothers coming home are really are trying to get their rights back. You know, I see a lot of that. So it's split down the middle from what I see. You know, as far as the disfranchisement goes, it's just a lack of concern. It's not really a denial. It's more denial of guys like me who have violent charges who, you know, are being told that we can't get our rights to vote back because of the violence of the charge, you know what I'm saying? And I think legislation going on now trying to change that, you know, they say I have to wait 5 years or so, and then submit other type of paperwork, and they would decide based on, you know, the progress I made since I've been home and look at each individual case as far as violent offenders go. So, but, and that's how I see it, you know, the disfranchisement just comes from individuals who really not putting forth the effort to, you know, because they can get their rights to vote back if it's a non-violent offense. But those without an offense, you know, they dragging us, you know what I'm saying? But I guess the fight still continues on that perspective, you know. What I do see, though, is just the lack of the unawareness of what guys face or what guys experience coming home. That's a big thing that people really don't know, all of the atrocities or crazy, unimaginable things that go on in prison. You know, we watch these TV shows and they show guys getting shanked or guys getting sexually abused, you know, raped or whatever, but they don't see the everyday common back and forth antagonism of officers against inmates or offenders or prisoners. You know, they don't know about these things. They don't know about the bitter extortion rank going on, as far as if you catch a charge, or they might just give you a fake charge, just like you say, just for utilizing your rights, you know, to complain against some issue or grieve a certain issue that you might be right about, and how they will falsify a charge and take your money, you know, and how this discourages people from even utilizing a grievance procedure or complaint procedure. You know, a lot of people don't know nothing about these things or how they use intimidating factors to, like, handcuff you, put you in ambulatory restraints and have you in a cell 24 hours a day with your boxes on or maybe even naked, you know, hog-tied, handcuffed to your feet and ankles, you know what I'm saying, and how they utilize these tactics to intimidate you and discourage you from utilizing on a complaint procedure. So a lot of people don't know about that story. Like, when I get to telling prison stories or how, you know, a lot of guys in prison are psychologically damaged, or they go, they're quick to put these guys on these psychogenic drugs, you know, and you know, these guys are planting their own feces, you know, how they got real psychological problems, but the first thing the prison gonna do is just give them these drugs to numb them up, like Thorazine and all those other, you know, real powerful narcotics, you know. And so this is what's really foreign to a lot of people out here, you know what I'm saying, as well as the disenfranchised, you know. So it's definitely a goal and a mission to just open people's minds to the whole negative adverse effects of prison, you know, and to start looking for more productive ways or more positive alternatives in how to correct people instead of just throwing them in these cages and these cold cinder block boxes and just doing what they want to people, you know, making money off of it at the same time.
So let me ask you, right? So okay, and let's move towards that, man. Pathogenic prison, criminogenic prison solutions being productive. First, before I ask you a question, I want to make a statement about the notion between violent and nonviolent criminals, because I too could be like considered a violent criminal. But I think we have to. I think the people first and foremost have to challenge the legislature and the power structure to distinguish between a violent crime and violent criminals or violent people. Because just because you have committed a violent offense or were involved in a violent offense doesn't necessarily mean you're a violent person. You have people who have been associated with who have committed violent crimes. You have people that may have engaged in one particular act of a violent crime, been charged with a violent felony, and now they're labeled as a violent criminal their whole life, but in actuality, they have never, ever committed a violent offense or a violent act. So we have to challenge the power structure to stop using political speak and political talk, right, to be able to do what it is they're trying to do as far as create industrial complex, make money off people with this nonviolent, violent rhetoric, because you got brothers who in here for so-called nonviolent crimes who are some of the most violent individuals in the prison. And then you got guys in the prison that's called violent crimes who are the most laid-back, peaceful brothers in the prison. You dig what I'm saying? So those labels are their speak, their spin for people who have an ulterior motive. And I want to ask you, man, dealing with that right there in particular, you know, you said you have a violent crime, but how do you think, what do you think people think about in general about, you know, justice for so-called violent criminals? Because the word, every time I see the news, it's like, let the nonviolent, the drug dealers, you know, those who've been mass incarcerated by the drugs. But, you know, you was in here. The violent criminals are the ones who got the so-called violent criminals are the ones who got the exorbitant sentences with no relief. So how does the public feel about that? Are they conscious of that? And what would you speak, what would you say about
that? Yeah, they're not conscious. There's another, there's another victory for the propaganda movement and how they choose to create this imagery of the violent offender. Even, you know, even when you say it violent, it automatically create, you know, this animalistic guy who drooling at the mouth. You just get this crazy imagery when you think of the violent offender, you know. And a lot of people see it like that. You know, they think about the guy who is violent, he must, you know, kill four or five people. He must have robbed and raped somebody, you know. And so they are quick to be like, yeah, well, the violent people do need to stay in jail, really not knowing the particular circumstances behind, you know, why a person did what they did, or not knowing, you know, how old, how the age factor involved, you know, and how some guys committed crime when they was very young, you know, 18, maybe 17, some even 16. You know, it was tried as adults. And so they just unaware, you know, they just unaware. And it's really just being told, just accepting things. We're not, just like you say, not challenging. And so the only way they're going to challenge it is once they know about it. And that's the goal of us, to awaken their consciousness, to raise their consciousness, to know about, you know, the facts at hand. And how just because a person committed a violent act doesn't mean that he is violent. You know, that's what it boils down to. And
I would say, man,
just thinking about that, I was thinking. I was just gonna ask you, you know, far as going off what I said about people being young and committing these crimes when they was young. Do you think, you know, for a person who came in prison while they was young, does it have an effect on them growing up in prison and with all the prison values or rules and regulations and culture of prison? Would that affect the person as they grow older in prison? Maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's about 5 minutes. I'm gonna keep it brief, man. Absolutely. I came here. I was 18 years old. I was an adult legally. Mentally, I was a child, and I can say that honestly, man, because Not only was my intellect low according to every measure that they got, the IQ test, the Bennett test, or whatever, my IQ was low, you know what I'm saying? But I was immature, you know what I mean? My worldview was skewed. I was a hip-hop generation from the 90s. I was in the street culture. I had no respect, no value system. At the time, the one that I was given by my family, you know, I basically overrode that with what I learned in the streets, you know what I'm saying? So, my development, I'm a fortunate case because of the fact that I was surrounded by some good brothers and I had a good, strong foundational support in my upbringing that I could fall back on. But if I had, like, not had people in my life when I was young to teach me good values so that I could have an alternative to what I had been taught in the street, like a lot of brothers don't, you could come in here, man, and just end up being a monster, and I've seen it. You know what I'm saying? I've seen dudes come in here, man, and just go to the next level. You know what I'm saying? I've seen dudes take their violent acts to the next level. I've seen dudes take their savagery to the next level. Because prison produces savage mentality, all-out mentality, all-or-nothing, I-don't-give-a mentality. You know what I'm saying? And a rugged, you know, do what you got to survive. Ain't nobody going to do nothing for me but me. F these MFs. You know what I'm saying? That's the mindset. I'm trying to give it to you graphic, but that's the mindset in here. So if you come in here and you 16, 17, 18, and you happen to, you know, protect your manhood, protect your property, you know what I'm saying? Protect your sanity. You know what I'm saying? Those things right there in and of itself, you know what I mean? Can hinder your development. True. You dig? So... yeah, I got some stories. We're running out of time. We're going to pick that up. I got some hella stories, man. But, yo, I'm just fortunate. I know some brothers who wasn't so fortunate. I know some brothers who came in with me, young, who are homosexuals now, who wear makeup. You know what I'm saying? That's the truth.
Yeah.
That being said, we almost out of time, man. Free all political prisoners, man. Yahoo! We got a movement going on, Virginians for Better Nutrition. Check us out on Facebook. We need the support of the people.
Right.
Make sure you support the brothers behind the wall, man. End mass incarceration, man. The black community suffering because you got a lot of solid, strong community leaders behind the wall, man. What you want to say to the people before we jet, bro?
That's right. I want everybody to open your eyes, be more receptive. When you hear brothers talking about prison issues, laws that need to be changed, start to participate. You know, don't just shrug it off. Don't just ignore it. You know, let's get active. Let's get motivated. Let's all come together and do what we need to do to change these laws, because we all got somebody locked up behind the wall. And we all want to see the better of that person. So the only way we can do it is to come together. There's powers in numbers, you know. Do this.
You know what? I want to say this to the people, too, man. Donald Trump is a racist. Do not vote for Donald Trump, black people. He do not support your issues. Do not be fooled by the whole propaganda that he going to create jobs. He going to snatch jobs. He's a capitalist, imperialist, fascist dog. I hate to say it like that. I know people like, wow, but it's real. The man felt like that about me. He felt like that about you.
Don't
let him fool you. And I'm saying the whole Republican Party don't mean us no good. Antonin Scalia ain't got nothing on Thurgood Marshall. Hey, yo, did you see, what do you think, what did you think, man, about Beyonce performance at the Super Bowl, bro, huh?
Oh, it was mega piece. It was powerful. I mean, initially watching it, I didn't pick up all the signs and some of the media and all of everybody else did, you know. But when I look back on it, you know, the black, it was powerful. You know, it was great. I think it was very much needed, especially coming from a celebrity in this day and time to have the courage to do it. You know, the audacity to speak up and speak about Black Lives Matter, because, you know, it's rare that black people are doing that today. You know, they're afraid that they might lose their property or their positions and their prestige or, you know, their European friendship. But for her to do it, that's great. And I think they need to do more of it. The same way it was going on in the 60s with Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali and all them righteous brothers, you know, we need that same thing today. Raise that consciousness. Get people involved. You know, word.
Absolutely. And I'm asking everybody also, man, for this Black History Month, this is the 50th anniversary of the Black Panther Party. Don't allow your government to define who they were for you, man. They were not terrorists. They were community leaders, activists who love their people, who love justice, freedom, and equality. Learn about them brothers. Shout out to them brothers and sisters.
That's right. The brothers had the free lunch program and everything, you know. Really out there educating the people, giving them political awareness, and we still need that to this day. Everybody be peace, one love.
Hold up, 60
seconds.
Your room. Okay, and in closing, man, Virginians for Better Nutrition, please help us out. We love y'all. Look for us next week. Check us out on Sankofa Radio, blogtalkradio.com, Sankofa Radio. Hold up.
Peace.